Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Every day I get in the queue.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Don't forget all the other things you can do on my website, like listen to thousands of archives, read thousands of articles, and find out about the hundreds of our Brain Trust members and lots of other stuff that you can do there, and more to come, I promise. Mark Mills is our guest. He's a founding partner of Digital Power Capital. He's a physicist whose career began in integrated circuits and defense electronics. He was a former consultant, staff consultant to the White House Science Office. He and Peter Huber have written a book called The Bottomless Well, The Twilight of Fuel, The Virtue of Waste, and Why We Will Never Run Out of Energy. I like people who put their thoughts right out on the table there. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, thanks very much.
It's good to have you here, Mark. I appreciate it. And I already like you, Mark, and I'll tell you why.
Okay, I
like people who don't mind saying how they feel and putting it right out on the table. And I don't mean people who are rude or insensitive. I'm talking about people who have ideas and say, these are my ideas. This is what I believe. Come and get it. And that's what you guys did. And you know, whether anybody agrees with you or not, I want to find out, because I want you to tell us some more about what you're thinking here in your book. But I like that. I like the way you guys put out your ideas and your positions right out on the table. Why do you think we have, as you say, that we will never run out of energy?
Well, for a very simple reason. I mean, it's I'll confess my bias up front that being a physicist, I sort of approach things from a fundamental perspective. But I've spent a lot of time in economics in my life, so excuse me, both count. Mother Nature provides an enormous quantity of energy around us. There's stunning quantities of energy around us of all kinds. Getting energy is a technology story. It's not counting barrels or tons. It's all about technology, ways to tap into these flows and vast catacombs of energy. And once you fully understand that this has always been a technology story, and everyone knows, and you don't have to be a scientist to know this, the technology keeps getting better over time. It's getting better faster now. If you connect those two dots, you know that we're not going to run out of energy. Just not the case. So that's sort of the essence.
But are we going to run out of energy that we can use? I mean, I agree with you. There's energy everywhere, but somehow we've decided, somewhere back along the way, we decided that the primary energy is going to be fossil fuel to use in an internal combustion engine.
Well, first of all, let's deal with hydrocarbons. Oil, most notably, because it's in the news so much today, to assert that we're running out of oil would mean that we're oil. And you're right. I mean, when I say it's a technology story, I mean by specific and aggressive implication, technology that's affordable and usable. I don't mean technology that's theoretical. I mean, engineers don't scientists dream, engineers build. So we're talking about real world stuff. We have in just one oil field in North America, in the Athabasca tar sands, by a specific example, something like 2 trillion barrels of oil.
Is that the one in Alberta?
That's the one in Alberta. Now, the entire world has only consumed 1 trillion barrels of oil to date, cumulatively. The reason we don't use a lot of oil from there is that the technology to extract it has only recently become affordable. It's not that we couldn't get it at all. It's a question of the affordability of technology. 30 years ago, we did not get oil from the bottom of the ocean on the Arctic Circle. So the oil on the North Sea was not considered a useful reserve or resource. It was there, untappable by any technology human beings had. Now it's possible to find and lift oil from the Arctic Circle for costs of well under $10 a barrel. I mean, it's just inconceivable 30 years ago. It's technology that's made a difference, not oil suddenly showing up there.
Well, let me say this, Mark. From a small business perspective, we don't wake up in the morning wondering if we're going to run out of petroleum, of fossil fuels, to be able to convert into gasoline and diesel fuel to run our trucks. We don't wake up worrying about that so much as we wake up worrying about whether we can afford what's available to us.
Well, okay. So, you know, again, I'm stipulating that it's affordable. Short-term price spikes are not a resource question. So every time the price of oil runs up before a whole variety of geopolitical and business and political reasons, everybody worries you're going to run out of oil. So let's first stipulate that the price spike does not say anything about the long-run availability of energy. It just says nothing about it at all.
So you think that you believe that with fuel, I should say, crude oil now at what, $56, $57 a barrel, that has nothing to do with the fact that there's a supply and demand problem?
Oh, so supply and demand in the short term, the micro and macroeconomics are very different things. Sure.
Right.
Of course, in the short term, people.
So right now, it's at least part of the equation is supply and demand, isn't it?
Of course, it's the short term supply. What people have chosen to move, chosen to sell, what they've chosen to drill for. It takes. Look, I'm not saying that you can't have price spikes run up in short term shortages because somebody does something stupid or tries to manipulate markets. That does not mean the world's running out of oil. It's
so basically, what you're saying is that we. And of course, you understand as small business owners, you know, we have a hard time thinking macro if we can't afford micro.
What you're saying is that
yes, we have challenges now. Yes, the price of oil is at record dollar highs, not relative to inflation, but to adjust for inflation, but record dollar highs. Yes, we have all that, but it is a temporary situation. Is that what you're saying?
It's a temporary situation, so we shouldn't be forging huge national policies that cost taxpayers billions of dollars on a predicate that's false.
Right.
Also, look, there's a very important thing. We don't like the high price of oil right now, and you're absolutely right about stating the inflation-adjusted reality. The reality is for oil to reach the price it was in 1981 at the peak, it would have to be $90 a barrel, so there's a lot of headroom yet. And really, very importantly, and this explains why oil prices have not dramatically impacted the economy yet, to have the same economic impact in relative terms, it would have to be $130 a barrel. As opposed to where it is today. Now, good news and bad news, right? It means there's a lot of headroom for prices to spike yet. The good news is it hasn't impacted our economy hugely. And the fundamental reason is that compared to the last oil price spike of 25, 26 years ago, what has happened is our economy has become more dependent on electricity. Since then, at that time, the economy got 60% of all of its primary energy from oil. Today, 60% of the economy is fueled by electricity. Electricity is almost entirely not oil. It's domestic fuel. We're a highly electrified economy. 80% of all the energy growth in the last 25 years has been fueled by electricity, which, again, is fueled by not oil, by coal, by uranium, by rainfall. So we have a highly energized economy, but energized by electricity increasingly. Oil prices have moved somewhat into the twilight of our economy. This is why we call it the twilight of fuels.
Mm-hmm.
Oil is important. It's like saying wheat's not important. Of course it is, but it doesn't drive our economy as much as it used to.
Mark, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break and come right back after these messages with our new friend Mark Mills. And when we come back, he says the cost of energy has more to do with the extraction than the availability. We're going to get him to tell us what he means by that. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate, and we're visiting with our new friend Mark Mills. He and Peter Huber are the authors of the new book, The Bottomless Well. A very interesting book, folks. They make some very dramatic points and some points in here that a lot of people probably will take issue with, but they make them very well and very scientifically. And Mark, congratulations on that. You got a website you want to give us?
Thanks. Well, you can if you go to the bottomless well. If you just type that in Google, it'll pull up all the relevant websites.
All right, and the book's available.
Well.
I know the book's available wherever books are sold.
You bet.
Okay. In the book, you say that the cost of oil has more to do with the extraction than the reserves or the availability.
Exactly.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if we've got as I mentioned earlier, the oil in the North Sea, the fact that we could get to it, it was entirely a consequence of the technologies of offshore oil platforms and deep water drilling and seismic imaging. The same is true of the oil in Athabasca. The same is true of essentially every energy resource. People are fond of saying that solar energy is free. It is. The cost of it is all tied up in the conversion technologies, the photovoltaic cell. Well, oil is free, too. We didn't do anything. We didn't pay for it to be there.
Right.
it's all tied up in the technologies we need to find it and to extract it and purify it in forms we care about. Increasingly, it's the conversion and extraction technologies that determine how much we pay for the final energy we use. And by that, maybe the easiest example to think about is a car. I mean, if you think about a car, almost all the cost of driving a car is tied up in the hardware and the leather and the engine and all that, all those pieces. I mean, 80+% $2 a gallon for the average driver, the cost to drive a car is tied up 80% in everything except gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Gasoline actually accounts for under 15% of the cost to own and operate a car. So that's just for a car. So all the conversion stuff, the things we need, are more important than the fuel itself. If you move up the food chain, let's say your computer, your Pentium, or if it's a data center, if it's a Google, you know, server farm, the energy is still important. Everything's connected. Now, bits are just a form of electrons, and you've got to have energy to run them. And yet, no one thinks about the energy cost, really, of running your computer. But I can tell you that the cost of running a computer in terms of primary energy terms is about 1 or 2%. That's how much it cut, 1 or 2%. If you move to a laser, say, to do eye surgery, it's a tenth to a hundredth of a percent. But you have to burn coal somewhere or split atoms somewhere and have fuel to make that laser beam work.
Let's talk about petroleum in the Middle East. Now, I have this sneaky suspicion that the Saudis don't have as much oil as they'd like for us to believe that they have. Now, I don't know why I think that, but I've been over there a little bit, and not that that's any reason for me to believe this, but no one really knows, at least outside of the kingdom, as far as I know, how much oil they have. Maybe you do, but I suspect that they don't have as much oil as maybe some people think they do. What do you think about that?
Well, it's entirely possible. It's a closed society, and then the last time we had any good data was, of course, when they kicked the Western oil companies out more than 25 years ago. From my perspective, it doesn't really matter because they've become, in the long run, they know this. I think they become irrelevant to the world scene in the long run. In the short term, they still have big influence. And the problem geopolitically, which is a little different than our long run view on energy in our book. In the short term, there's no doubt that there are huge quantities of very cheap oil. The oil they have there was found long ago. It's very inexpensive to raise. So the fact that they, let's say, at the most, it cost them a couple bucks a barrel to get oil out in the market, that gives them huge margin to tinker in markets.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a good thing. We all know this. We don't like it. But the reverse is they need the money. So they have every incentive not to have oil prices too high for too long.
Right.
Because what that does is stimulate other things like the North Sea or the Athabasca tar sands or other alternatives, typically alternative hydrocarbons, by the way. It encourages people to liquefy coal even if you let prices be high too long. But they do have a problem. They will run out of their cheap oil.
When do you think that will happen?
You know, it'd be just a guess, but we're certainly talking at least a decade, in my view. But I don't know. And when they run out of the oil, they've got lots of natural gas they can liquefy, which has the same economic value as the oil. That'll buy them another, 20 years. I mean, they've got decades, but they don't have forever. And
Mark,
if technology gets better, they have even less time.
When the last time oil prices were high, it was an artificial situation because of the embargo, right?
Well, it was a combination of the embargo and supply chain problems, and
right.
frankly, panic on the spot price buyers market. It's a bit
But the price that oil is now has nothing to do with embargoes or any kind of supply chain thing. It seems to be more real than the last time.
I don't think so. I think it's panic. I mean,
Do you think so?
I think the act of the stored reserves of oil above the ground are at record high levels. We've got a spot price market that's worried about the Middle East and about Iraq.
So you think speculation is causing the prices to be so high?
I think it's a heavy speculator-driven game at the moment. And spot prices are driven by speculators thinking it's going to keep going up. It's just like the stock market when you play speculation, and that has a lot to do with it. It's not the entire
Well, typically, story. When something is over-speculated, which you seem to think that it is, and I think and other economists on the show have said this very thing. In fact, Richard DeCaser said this a year ago on this show. That also portends maybe a crash. Do you see that happening?
I would, if I were betting man on this, but
go ahead.
I'll tell you, in my mind, there's no possibility oil prices sustain these levels. Let's say 5 years from now, I would bet that they actually collapse long before that.
So you think that you see a collapse in the next few years. That's very interesting.
Mark
Mills, will you come back another day? Very provocative information you're providing us. We'd like to have you back on another day.
I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
We'd love to do it. Mark Mills, ladies and gentlemen, he is the co-author of The Bottomless Well. Going to be right back with Indy Freeze. I'm Jim Blassingame. The Small Business Advocate is 29 after. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.